Good evening, and welcome to Mondo Eros. My name is Stephen Otero, and I'm your host for this evening. And this is our latest broadcast on the brand new adult channel right here on bbsradio.com. And we have some very interesting and stimulating conversation for you tonight, because I have with me one of my special friends who is a really cool guy, and I'm very grateful that he's here tonight doing this broadcast with me, because I think he has some really interesting things to say about relationships and human sexuality. His name is Reed Milacco, and he is best known as the founder and facilitator of Cuddle Party. And we're going to talk about that and other aspects of relationships that Reed works and that he studies in. And that I'd like to start also with the fact that Reed had a very interesting laboratory in which he formulated his theories. And first, I'd like to welcome Reed to the broadcast. Hi, how you doing, Reed?
I'm doing really well, Steve. Now you have me intrigued. What was my laboratory?
Your laboratory. The laboratory you had behind the bar all those years.
Okay, that's good. That makes sense. I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm like, I don't even know myself. He knows me so well.
Well, I remember you saying that once. You had this laboratory that you formulated a lot of the theories that you began with while working as a bartender.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that's very astute, and thank you for remembering that. So much of
I'm the man who remembers everything.
Yay! And that's why you're the host of. That's why you have a show.
So that's where the whole genesis of what you do began. You observed all these the different situations, the way people interact, and the way in which they probably don't interact.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bartender for 20 years. I started in college working in bars to pay my way through university, and you know, culturally speaking, bartenders and hairdressers are the people that you know, strangers have complete license to just unload all of their woes on, and I got really, really interested in relationships and sexuality. I grew up in a family where my parents loved my brothers and I very, very much, but they weren't really great communicators in their marriage. And so I became really geeky about trying to figure out, like, how do I love the people in my life as much as my parents did, but not do what they ended up doing. And then bartending gave me the perfect, as you said, laboratory to talk to, you know, thousands and thousands of people over the course of 20 years and really do some field research and find out what's going on out there and what's working for people, what's not, and possibly, you know, how we can change things. And I've been very, very fortunate to have a career now with Cuddle Party success and with the success of the other goofy and zany workshops that I come up with. To test out a lot of these theories, and a lot of them seem to be holding true.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've attended several cuddle parties. I can attest to how really great they are. They really give you a really excellent manner to begin communications. The protocols that you use, and before the actual cuddling begins, I think are very, very helpful, particularly, you know, what it's like to ask and to be told no, but in a gentle way, and that you can experience that and realize, I'm not going to die.
Yeah.
I can survive that, you know, and it's just really, you know, it's a really, like, it just changes your whole perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's so much like, I mean, it's normal. Like, we grow up trying to do a good job in relationships, trying to do a good job in understanding ourselves, our understanding the people that we're in relationships with, but you know, we learn our communication skills and our relationship role modeling from our parents and from the people around us who pretty much learned it from their parents and from the people around them. And so we just keep passing down generation after generation not the greatest set of relationship tools. And I think now, you know, with the advent of the internet and culturally, we have a little bit more permission as men and as women to talk about sex and relationships a little bit more honestly. I think that's starting to shift for people.
Yes, it's been such a transformation, especially what I've seen, and also especially in myself, what I've seen, what I've experienced the last 5 years since I've been a part of Sexy Spirits, and from that I got introduced to Cuddle Party. And I got to meet you and Marsha, and we had done previously a video interview, and that was actually quite good to do that, and also I would see you, you know, running to you at the different polyamory groups whenever you're here, because a lot of times you split your times between East Coast and West Coast.
At this point with my career. And for people that are interested in what I'm up to, they can go to my website, which is readaboutsex.com. And that's spelled R-E-I-D, about sex. And I mean, I've been fortunate now because Cuddle Party has grown big enough that it kind of runs itself, to be jumping into other territories and taking a lot of the communication tools and relationship skill sets that I have found work really well for people no matter what relationships they're in. And I've been creating a lot of other workshops and talking at conferences about these skill sets and applying them in different ways and trying to come up with stuff that's fun. Because I think a lot of things that are happening out there in the dating world and in the marriage world and in just the relationship world is that people, you know, are trying to change and get better at these things so earnestly that we've also kind of lost a sense of play and a sense of fun. And Cuddle Party really hit that note on the head with making things a little bit goofy so that we don't have to get so uptight and anxious, even when we're working on deep issues.
Humor and is so important, you know, to keep that perspective. But it just really helps so much. You know, I really admire what you've done with that. Every time I see a Cuddle Party, I think of you, it's a really great achievement.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky because my natural self-expression is kind of a little bit goofy. You know, I tend to be kind of compared to this, like, Labrador retriever, golden retriever of sex educators. And it works really well for me, one, because it's my personality. It's actually authentic. And two, because I think for people who have been frustrated with dating, frustrated in their relationships, not feeling like they're doing a great job, or that the other person, you know, they're trying to communicate with the other person and not feeling heard, being able to get people to laugh, especially together or even in one-on-one coaching situations, which I do some work with people on, getting people to laugh is a great way to let off tension and anxiety and to start, like, just changing the emotions surrounding these areas where some of us don't feel particularly grounded or adept in. You know, and for me, another area that I've been working in now around sex education and relationship education is some of the workshops I'm creating on readaboutsex.com have a lot more mature content in them. And, you know, I've got one workshop that's getting a lot of attention or success. A lot of people are interested in it, which is a workshop on how to negotiate threesomes successfully. And I'm getting a lot of people that are coming to that workshop for two different reasons. One, I actually have demonstrations, which are all fully clothed, but I use people from the audience to actually, like, try out different positions when you have three people on the bed, kind of the Kama Sutra of threesomes. And we make it really fun and laugh, and everyone has a really great time. But what's important around the learning of that is sex is one of those few things in our culture that we're not allowed to watch other people to learn about. You know, if you go to a fancy dinner and there's like 1,800 knives and forks, you know, if you don't know which fork you're supposed to pick up, you kind of look around at the table and watch what fork everyone else picks up. But with sex in our culture, we can't do that. And I'm having a lot of fun, and people are being really appreciative of this new series of workshops that I'm doing where we're actually, like, demonstrating stuff, and people are getting to watch what it looks like. And, you know, in some of the workshops, it's you know, it's rated PG-13 or rated R, so everything's fully clothed. And then I have another series of workshops where it's more NC-17, and we actually have nudity and in some cases, you know, actual demonstrations. But people are fascinated and so hungry for information, especially visual information, where they can actually see how things work. Yeah. Because for so long, so many of us, we're trying to learn how to be better lovers from watching porn. And,
right.
And watching porn to get better at sex is like trying to watch a Bruce Lee movie to learn self-defense. You're going to get your ass handed to you out on the street.
Absolutely. It's just so... that's really so important, and I'm, you know, I really applaud you for doing that, because where do you go to learn? You know, it's like the only, that's absolutely true. I mean, there's just so many guys, that's where they get their, that's where they learn from, is porn.
Yeah, and there's no one's talking, no one's communicating and negotiating boundaries in a porn.
No.
So they're not learning how to actually talk about what feels good for them, to check in, see what feels good for the other person, and it starts to perpetuate itself where you're actually reinforcing that you're not allowed to talk in the bedroom.
Right.
And so much of even these workshops where I'm doing, you know, maybe semi-nude, you know, sexual demonstration type sex education, the important part for me is to always be reinforcing the communication part. Like, this is how you negotiate this. This is how you check in with your lover and say, does this feel good? Does this feel better than that? And to keep modeling for the people that come to these workshops that you should, you know, build that habit and exercise that muscle of checking in verbally with your partners all the time. And that's just so important no matter what you're doing. Because not only are you getting more information by checking in with your partner, you're also role modeling that they can. It's okay for them to talk and speak up and tell you what they want and even check in with you. And that's the stuff that my mom and dad never had in their relationship.
And part of the reasons we're also fortunate to have you tonight is because you're actually doing a workshop tonight, are you not?
Tonight is actually a teleclass.
Yes.
On for women called Women Who Give Too Much, and it's a four-part teleclass that will be available later for a download for people who can't be on the calls. And I'm collaborating with Diana Adams, who has a website called FeministOutlaw.com, who is a sexual civil rights lawyer and also an amazing polyamory educator. And we decided to do a series of calls to really help women who tend to deplete themselves in their lives and give so much such that they don't know how to receive or they can't recharge themselves at all. And we've been getting some really good feedback from the women who've been on the call. We even have a couple of men who are on the call. Because the women in their lives, they're really passionate about helping them become more empowered, being able to speak up for themselves and communicate, you know, which again just goes back to a lot of what I do is about communication and giving people permission to even start talking about what's going on for them in their relationships. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I know you guys are doing at Texas Spirits, and I really applaud the work that you and Anton are doing.
Thank you.
But, you know, there's so, people have such a huge need and hunger for this kind of information, and so many people just don't know where to go.
Yes. And you also had one that I listened in on the other night, Energetic Sex from Mystical to Practical. You had that Monday night.
Yeah, that, and we had 93 people sign up for that teleclass. I don't know how many were actually on the call, because a lot of people couldn't be on the call, but are downloading that call as well. And that was a free teleclass. And I think what we kind of tapped a nerve for some people out there. You know, there's a lot of people out there who don't study Tantra or Taoist sexual practices and get a little intimidated by the language. And so, you know, for me, it was about creating a fun, informative call that kind of wasn't woo-woo or mystical in its languaging, and we got a really huge response, and I was really, really happy about that. What were your thoughts? Did you enjoy the call?
I enjoyed it very much. I really enjoyed it. You know, I like the fact that you can take this information and translate it for a modern contemporary audience, so it doesn't have all that woo-woo in it.
Uh-huh. And believe me, like, I'm as woo-woo as the woo-wooest person I know. I love getting all mystical and talking, you know, chakras and metaphysical stuff. You know, but when you, and for me as an educator, I strive to try to language things in ways that invite people into the conversation rather than exclude. And unless I'm talking at a Tantra conference or to a group of people that use that particular vocabulary, my default setting is to try to not dumb up the conversation, but use vocabulary that's more accessible to everyone. And then we run into this problem as Americans. You know, it's hard enough for us to even, you know, say vagina and penis on the radio or on television. And so we have such a limited vocabulary to describe normal, you know, quote-unquote sex, that when you start talking about ecstatic states, spiritual and sacred sexuality, or anything more nuanced than just penis-vagina sex, we're literally at a loss for words. So in some instances, you know, Tantra and Taoist practices have been extremely helpful to give us more languaging, but there's a need for, like you were saying, contemporary languaging for these phenomenons, too, so that more people can be like, oh, that's what that is.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's, you know, we really have to... it's great to honor the lineage of what came before us, but, you know, we're not living back then. We're living today, and we have to deal with our situation in the present time, in the present moment. And the true nature of Tantra is to be in the present and the present moment, right? So why not use the present language?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I had a very large and somewhat distinguished martial arts background before I became a sex educator. And, you know, one of my senseis was very pragmatic in how he taught. And he's like, listen, he goes, this is what this move is called in Japanese. If you can remember that, awesome. If you can't, I'm actually more concerned with that you know how to do the technique so that you get home safe at night.
Yes.
You know, whether you know how to spell the name of it and whether you can pronounce it correctly is not my priority, given what I'm actually trying to teach you. And I think a lot of people, you know, in the bedroom are so ill-equipped with permission to talk about sex with their lovers and with the tools to develop a sense of self-esteem and confidence, or at least to quiet down the noise, the monkey chatter in their heads, so that they can be present with their lovers. Any way that we can language things or teach people in a way that really lands on them and gives them better tools to empower their relationships, I'm all for it. You know, I'm not saying my way is the best way. I'm just saying, you know, the more we can talk and think and collaborate with each other and give people more permission to figure out what works for themselves, the better off we're going to be as a country and as a planet.
That's just really, really fantastic. I mean, we just need that so desperately to do this. To, you know, I think it's how we're going to survive as a species if we can do that.
Well, and you know, even if it doesn't link into the survival of the species, at least we'll all be having a little bit more fun in the bedroom.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we can at least hope for that. But I think you're right. I think it's going to evolve us as a race as well.
I was getting a little mystical right there. But what I also what I see what you're doing now is you're doing something that I had been hoping that somebody would do and talk about for a very long time, and that is you're having an upcoming workshop, which I hope that when you get back to New York that you'll have here. You're having an upcoming workshop on outer course.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to be doing that workshop here in San Francisco next week, at the end of March. And basically, we've kind of humorously entitled it "Clothes on Sex."
Yes.
And we're basically going to be spending a couple of hours teaching and demonstrating some really fun, juicy, really practical ways of spicing up the sex that comes before the sex, and what I like to call outer course, which is, you know, has a lot to do with kissing, has a lot to do with using your body and kind of, you know, resurrecting the long-lost art of dry humping and all those things that we, you know, we did and explored and played with as young adults and teenagers and starting to really, like, get back into practice with that idea of delayed gratification and arousal and really teasing the sexual energy, which, you know, is very much a Tantra approach.
Yeah.
And this is kind of taking, you know, a lot of Tantra elements and kind of retrofitting them or revamping them for couples and for single people to start applying to their sex lives and never have to take their clothes off.
What got you started there? What was the thing that inspired you to go there?
That's a workshop that I've been wanting to do for a while, and I just kind of, a lot of what I do is very collaborative in nature, so I'm always looking for somebody to play with, you know, which is very, very much, you know, no surprise, as a relationship educator, I want to have somebody to do a workshop with, to have a relationship in that workshop with. And so Nellie Wilson from the Center for Sex and Culture was booking me to do some of my other workshops. I'm doing the threesome, Negotiating Successful Threesomes workshop at the Center for Sex and Culture, and then I'm doing another workshop called The Ergonomics of Dynamite Sex. And I've been wanting to collaborate with her for a while, so we just started kicking the idea and brainstorming ball around. And I was like, hey, you know, I've been wanting to do this workshop on outer course and, you know, the sex that you can have before you actually have sex. Would you want to collaborate with me on that? And it was a really good fit because she's, starting up a school for Sacred Touch, which I believe is called sacredtouchschool.com. So the timing was really good, and we just agreed to collaborate on it, and we're going to be running that workshop next week in San Francisco, and then I hope to bring that workshop to New York as well, and possibly D.C. and even Seattle, and just kind of, you know, one of my usual tourings around, that have that be one of my offerings.
That's great, because it's, you know, I've I remember when I first discovered it in the 90s, and it was around that time period, late 80s, early 90s, that you first began to see this word and to find this term. Of course, it had other, you know, there have been other terms associated throughout the years, dry humping, dry sex, body rubbing, frottage. But this particular hour course was developed, I would say, the late 80s, early 90s, as a sort of as a result of AIDS and the panic, let us say, in the heterosexual community about AIDS. And it was created as sort of like an alternative. And, you know, it was around for a little bit, but I don't think it really caught on fire. Yet, as I would relate from my own personal experience of it, I discovered about 12 years ago, a little bit more, I just found that this is, to me, this is Tantra. Because when I mm-hmm. do this with a partner, I can do everything that the Tantric people talk about. I don't have to do any kind of, well, as our dear friend Betty Dodson would say, I don't have to light any fucking candles to do this.
I love Betty.
You heard? Did you ever hear that story?
Yeah, I know. I've heard her say the phrase before, but I don't know that she's told the story. Do you want to tell me the story? That would be great.
It was I was there when it happened. She's the one. I'm the one she said it to. We were at Barbara Corrales' book party at the Museum of Sex, and Barbara was so gracious. She tipped her hat to Betty and said, "Betty is the true original Tantrika." And Betty just sort of like, you know, smiled. And I said, "Hey, Betty, does everything have to be called Tantra? Because I know how she is about that." And she goes, "How many fucking candles do I have to light?" And you know, Betty is so against woo-woo, you know, and it's, mm-hmm. but it's just so perfect the way she said it. And I just love that quote. And I love to be able to use it. And I'm so thankful that I was the one that heard it.
Yeah.
But
no, that's a great story.
It's a great story. But, you know, it's also, in terms of my own personal experience relating it to, yeah, I can do, I have, when I engage with a partner with that, I have the full body experience, which I normally have with conventional intercourse. But with this, everything just goes right into, clicks right in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also for me, it brings me back to, it brings me back to, like, let's say, early childhood, where a man is at that point, where boys are, let's say, are multi-orgasmic, because we have not yet learned to ejaculate. That has not yet happened to us. And once that happens, that's like the big thing, and everything else that happened before that goes right out the window, and you have to spend most of your life trying to, when you finally when you get to a certain age and you start studying Tantra and you start studying the Taoist practices and you learn how to experience this again, it's like, hey, wait a second. What? Oh, wow. I remember what that used to be like. So that's what that's so appealing to me about it.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, I'm really hoping that that we can make it catchy and fun and that people respond to it. I mean, so much of, you know, marketing, you know, which a lot of us as sex educators, we're not, you know, internet marketers, even though we kind of need to be. So it's like, how do you pick the right name for something and write the kind of copy that
right.
tells what you're trying to do in a way that, you know, pulls at people, and how do you convince somebody who's, you know, who has a decent sex life to begin with that there's more out there? Because not all of us, not everybody out there is a sex geek like you and I are, and part of my job is trying to share what I have found and what I've discovered to people in ways that really land on them so that they can take those tools back into their relationship lives.
Yes, it's just like, wow, it's just a really, really good thing. And I'm just glad finally someone's doing it, because it's just amazing to me that it's not more, at least in the heterosexual community, it's not as discussed as much. I know in the gay community there's that what they call now frat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and there's a whole like subculture that has grown up around that, which has
yep.
developed around that. So I guess you can't use that term. That's already been taken. So we have to think of something else.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also just about you know using these terms so that interchangeably, because frottage doesn't have to be a gay only thing.
Right.
In the same way that you know, yoga, now in this day and age, people are beginning to understand that there's all different types of yoga. And that, you know, the word itself might actually, you know, as you go deeper into the exploration of something, you know, all it is just a signpost. It doesn't, you know, it points to more. It always points to more. And you can always learn more and distinguish more. And if we can start to get people excited that their love lives and their sex lives are just gateways for them to go deeper into exploring themselves and then sharing these journeys and explorations with the people that they love, if we can start getting people excited about that,
right.
and start giving them the basic tools to navigate that journey. And that's the kind of stuff that my mom and dad never had. And I, you know, imagine what my childhood would have been like if I had gotten to grow up and watch them practice and explore that journey together, rather than me witnessing them, you know, constantly butting their heads, trying
yeah.
to do a good job with each other, but continuing to fall a little bit short.
Oh, absolutely, and just the use of language and communication, and also a reclaiming, and let's say a rehabilitation of the word frottage, because whenever I look it up on the internet, it's always used in a negative term, because it's just people, they talk about people on the subways rubbing against someone, unsuspecting
mm-hmm.
partner, and they never use it in... as a positive, that they'll say, oh, also known as outer course, but when you go to outer course, you go right back to frottage. So it's like, you know, there's no, someone needs to do an edit on the Wikipedia article.
Well, you know, what we do have at our, you know, as an advantage is, you know, the quote unquote younger generations, which
yeah.
who knows who that includes now, anyone who just thinks young. You know, we have that penchant to reclaim terms and make them our own. You know, certainly the hip-hop scene is a great example of you know, taking the word nigger and co-opting it to their own use and making it an empowering term. The feminist culture took, you know, the C word, took cunt, and co-opted it for themselves. You know, maybe for us, you know, sexperts and sex geeks, we're supposed to reclaim frottage and give it a different spin this time around. Who knows?
Well, I hereby reclaim it for all sex geeks out there. It's been done. Make it so, number one.
Yes, Captain.
Well, actually, you're the captain. You're...
Does that,
I used to go by the name Captain Flannel.
Does this mean I'm the William Shatner of sex education? Because that's awesome.
Well, he's doing pretty, you know, he's had a long and career. I mean, you know, he's certainly resurrected himself. I mean, you know, that's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, I could do worse than to be the William Shatner of sex education, that's for sure.
Promise. That's a little arcade. You probably remember that.
No, I remember that. Yeah, yeah, that's not before my time. The butter commercials.
Yeah, I remember those. That was really great. But I love his new commercials for Priceline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has. That man has gotten more mileage and reinvented himself so many ways. It's amazing. He's become a parody of himself.
Yeah, and he's also he has a really great talk show as well. He's a great interviewer.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did a 1 hour with Janet Jameson, which is really really good. It's on the biography.
Wow.
Thing. So the man keeps going. He's an inspiration to us all. And I also wanted to talk about part of your work with Color Party.
Mm-hmm.
Was there was a conference, I think it was a year ago, or maybe it's even 2 years ago, for sex workers, tantricas. And you were there, and you asked a very provocative question.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, how much affection are you getting in your life, old sex healer, sex worker? Where is the affection in your life? And, wow, you know, I thought that was really, really great.
Thank you. Yeah, it was part of what I'm very fortunate and grateful to be is working inside of different sex-positive communities and talking about, you know, what are the principles and what are the things that make community work really well. And they're very similar. I mean, the relationship skills and communication skills that make a didactic relationship, you know, between two people work are also the principles that seem to make community work really well, which is just multiple relationships, which from a polyamory perspective just makes complete sense.
Right.
And in the tantra community, you know, and as a sex educator and as a, you know, somebody who works with people around sex and relationships, one of the things that I've had to learn for myself are what are my needs.
Yeah.
So that I'm not completely depleted and weak when it comes to being able to give 120% to the people that hire me to help them with their relationships. And in the tantra community, and especially at this conference, which was filled with a lot of people who, you know, were educators and teachers, there are a lot of people in the tantra community, just as there are in the sex education community and the sex therapy communities, who just don't take care of themselves really well. And that trickles into their work. It trickles into their personal lives. And so the question that I brought up at that conference was the beginning of a much larger conversation, which is, you know, what are you doing when you're not working to take care of yourself? And that applies to people who, you know, who are just muggles, who just have regular relationships too. Like, what are you doing to take care of yourself if you're a mother of three? So that you actually have a life and an energy to give back to your kids. And that means you need to be selfish a little bit sometimes. And it's true for us as tantricas and dakas and bikinis, and it's the same for sex therapists and yoga instructors.
Yeah, it's. I think that's very important that you raised that up and you gave that permission, as it were, because, you know, so much of these people, a lot of people who I know, they truly give, and it's truly a calling, and but to not take care of yourself, I think that verges one on becoming a martyr almost, an erotic martyr.
And you end up being angry and resentful at the people that you were once inspired to help.
Yes.
And I don't want to, you know, to the extent that we can start to shift things with a conversation and pay attention to what we can, how we can support each other as peers, I think there's a lot of value in supporting one another and in some ways kind of, you know, not pulling any punches and telling, you know, our fellow peers and sex educators, you know, you need to slow down and take care of yourself, or because when you're burned out, you're not going to help anybody, and you're actually going to hurt a lot of us because you're going to give the work that we do a bad name.
Right, and that's hallmark of the poly community, right? Communicate, communicate, communicate.
Yeah, exactly.
And communicate what you need. And
mm-hmm.
that, I think, you know, that it was part of a discussion I had on the first broadcast with Anton that we had. And he had had this discussion before in private that the importance of not only getting one's needs met, but the importance in terms of bringing something into fruition, into bringing something into a manifestation, of making that a need. And when you make that a need, you get the juice to make it happen. And that it's okay to have needs. Having needs doesn't make you needy.
Exactly. Yeah, and actually, you know, Betty Martin talks really, really well about needs and not being needy and being able to ask for what you want. She's a colleague and a peer of mine. She's a fellow couple party facilitator. And she's just been she's really amazing when it comes to that kind of communication skill set, and really savvy and a great teacher, and has been a good mentor for me around those things. Because if it's one thing Betty knows how to do, Betty Martin knows how to ask for what she wants and not settle for less.
I think that's really great, and I think that's something that we all have to learn and to do. I think so much of it, that's why we have to have so many of these classes, because we don't, what I was getting to, something that was coming to me was the problems of life are, you don't know what you want. If you do know what you want, you don't know how to get it. If you got it, you know how to deal with it. And so
yeah.
Much of that is just not knowing what you want. But then if you do know what you want, how do you get, like, how does an average guy, a single guy, and I will be guinea pig for this, because, you know, 5 years ago, I wasn't in Sexy Spirits. I was just a regular guy. I used to watch Naked New York. I used to see Jamie and Tristan. I saw all these people. And I went, wow. And then finally, I'm in there. Okay, I'm not just in the lecture anymore. I'm the doorman. Oh, I'm the assistant. Oh, I'm the manager now. And working up there. But how does an average guy who sees all this, how does he do this? How does he acquire the communication skills and to be able to ask, you know, I'd like to try this. Wow, this looks really,
mm-hmm.
oh, me, a regular person can do that? You don't have to be famous. You don't have to be
yeah.
a movie star to have this kind of experiences.
Yeah.
And well, you know, I applaud you for the work that you do, because it's really important.
Thank you. And I mean, a lot of what, you know, to just kind of touch briefly on what you said, like, I think a lot of it has to do with just giving people permission that it's okay to inquire. It's okay to be curious. You're not going to destroy the world by taking a peek outside of the box. And at this point in life, you know, most people are so shut down that any kind of curiosity is could be deemed, you know, non-conventional or alternative. And, you know, just to have the permission in a relationship to talk to your partner about what your fantasies are is something that a lot of couples don't give themselves permission to do. To give yourself permission, or to let other people know that they have permission, or to role model that they have permission because you're talking about something outside of the box. Like, that's, I think, one of our great gifts just as human beings, is you get to, just by starting the conversation, which doesn't mean you're agreeing to follow through on it, but just to start the inquiry with your friends. Hey, you know, I listened to this talk show the other day, and they were talking about this. What do you guys think about that? You know, to really, you know, rather than just bust on each other, make fun of each other, and you know, certainly I'm advocating, you know, have humor, have fun, but to really hold your friends to account and be like, no, like, I get the joke about making fun of such and such, but what do you really think about it? Do you think people who do that are bad human beings? Do you think that a couple who practices such and such can't be in love with each other? Like, what do you think? What do you feel? You know, that's the beginning. That's the gateway drug right there, is to really care about what your friends think and feel, not because you want to be like them, not because you want to, you don't want to disappoint them or have them be disapproving of you, but because you actually are giving them permission to consider and to talk about and to share their thoughts and feelings about sex and relationships. I think that is revolutionary. I think it's needed. And I think it's the one thing that we can all do quite easily, is start a conversation. And if you get people just talking about sex and relationships, I think that's going to start the ball rolling, and pretty soon that snowball's going to get too big to stop.
Absolutely. And I hope that snowball gets bigger and bigger. It turns into an avalanche.
Exactly. We're in agreement.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's just having, you know, we're meant to be curious people. That's what probably this is all about, is exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And having that permission, you know, and, you know, it doesn't make you a bad person to not only to want to try polyamory, let's say, but to realize, hey, you know, this is who I am. No wonder why the relationships haven't worked, because it's not that I'm a bad person. It's just because monogamy sucks, and it's not for me. And this is what to do.
And something that I take a lot of, you know, I take pains to make sure that people, or I try to reiterate it and make people understand, is, I mean, my personal self-expression in relationships happens to be non-monogamy. I'm not advocating that as better than monogamy.
Right.
What I try to teach people and reiterate for them is, what works is actually what works for you.
Yeah.
So when you can give yourself permission to try different things so that you know what doesn't work and so that you can hone in on what works for you, and then the next step is when you can start dating people who have similar expressions so that you're both enjoying those love styles together, things become a lot more harmonious. You know, in the poly communities, and I take time to make sure that, you know, I call people on this when I see it. But, you know, for some people, there is, in their way of defending what's fragile for them as they find their sea legs, so to speak, in this relationship style called polyamory, they can poo-poo monogamy, sometimes, you know, unconsciously, sometimes consciously.
Right.
And I always try to step in and be like, hey, you know, if poly is what works for you, that's what works for you. You know, monogamy for somebody who's monogamous is exactly what they should be doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have a value judgment around any of that. And what I try to role model is that people, you know, go and find what works for them.
Absolutely. And that's the way it should be. You should find out what works for you. And that's part of what discovering what life is, and if that is the right thing for you, monogamy, that's great. And if you want to be polyamorous and want to try everything and taste everything, as long as you're honest with yourself and you're honest with your partners, and you just say, hey, listen, this is who I am, this is what I do, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what more can you do if you're that honest, radically honest, and just coming out with who you are, then, you know, who can complain later on? I mean,
and also this idea of it's okay to try things.
Yeah.
It's okay to try things and then to figure out that didn't work or that's not what's true for me. I think, you know, we live in this culture where if you don't get it right the first time, you know, you're better off never trying it. And I don't think that's true. I think, you know, you should, you know, try things and, you know, order something off the menu you've never tried before so that you can be like, wow, I really hate that. That is horrible for me. I think that having that outlook on life to go and explore things and test your, you know, test your limits and your, you know, the areas that you think might be a little bit uncomfortable or the things that you've always wanted to do but could never give yourself. Try those on. And it's not a failure if you try something and the answer you come up with is, wow, I really didn't like that. I think that's a success.
Yeah, because at least you tried, and then you don't have to be, you know, you won't have to be, you know, years later on your deathbed going, gee, you know, I never tried that. You know, oh, I wish I had it. Well, yeah, now it's too late.
Exactly.
You know? It's to go with as much openness and with curiosity. And let's hear it for insatiable curiosity.
Yes, let's hear it for that.
It's really, yeah, it's so much of it is just about permission, giving permission and acceptance and self-acceptance. And just going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it's thank goodness that you know, we have you and the work that you're doing and the work that we're all doing to help other people to do this. So I think that's probably the most rewarding aspect of it.
Well, and thank you, Steve, for having me on the show and for, you know, taking the time to talk about stuff that I know is important to you as well, but giving me an opportunity to talk to people who probably haven't heard me talk before. And again, for, you know, for people that are interested in what I'm up to, you can find out more about what I'm, you know, what I'm tinkering around with at readaboutsex.com, and that's spelled R-E-I-D aboutsex.com.
And what are some of your other upcoming projects?
Well, I've got some stuff kind of going on in the background in Hollywood. I've got some reality shows that I've developed that are starting to get pitched around. I had created a whole sitcom around polyamory that HBO had almost bought. It's not dead yet, but it's still, you know, the fatal flaw of Hollywood is that once everyone's heard about your project, if no one's bought it, then it's kind of dead in the water. So I don't know that the sitcom will ever get picked up. But mostly right now, you know, I'm co-authoring a book with a very talented tantra instructor, Kamala Devi, that we hope to have out before the summer's end. I'll be in San Diego at the end of May, teaching a week's worth of workshops and a whole weekend-long workshop on open relationships. If people want to know more about that, they can go to my website. And in the beginning of May, I think it's 9th, 10th, and 11th, or 8th, 9th, and 10th, I'll be in Sedona, Arizona for the Sedona Dhaka Dakini Conference.
Oh, great.
And there I'll be talking about sexual healing work with rape and incest survivors, which is something I have some experience with and is one of those areas in the tantra community that is an area where we're needed, and it's an area where I know there needs to be some training to get people to be a little bit more coordinated around working with that demographic.
And which one is that again? Which one is that again?
The rape and incest survivors.
Oh, great. Yes, that's really important. I think that's if that healing can be done, that is so powerful.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of people in the tantra community that are doing that kind of work, and the problem or the challenge is there's some unique challenges to the dynamics of working with rape and incest survivors around tantric and sexual healing, if you haven't been taught what those dynamics are, it can have things kind of backfire, and you end up with a larger mess than you were trying to clean up in the first place. And so I'm hoping to, you know, start that conversation about how can we support each other as a community in working with this demographic in a way that is responsible, has integrity, and has powerful boundaries for the you know, the practitioners as well as the clients.
Wonderful. Wonderful. When are you back in New York?
I may be back in April, towards the end of April, but that's not for certain yet.
Okay, good. Well,
so and as soon as I figure that out, you'll be like the second or third person to know.
That'd be great. And we'll definitely want to schedule a workshop with you at Sexy Spirits. I'm looking forward to seeing you again and to experiencing your teaching.
Thank you, Stephen.
So I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. I especially want to thank Reed for being my guest. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this broadcast. So we will return next week with another special guest and some more very stimulating conversations. This is Mondo Eros. I'm Stephen Otero, and this is bbsradio.com. Thank you, and good evening.